Good morning. Steve Thompson in for Susie Jones today. Susie has a day off. If you have a financial question for Bruce and Peg, you can call this number 24/7 1-888-6-ADVICE. That's 1-888-6-ADVICE. And you can email your question to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. You can also call or text our studio line at 651-461-9226. Now, here is Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor Peg Webb and founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Bruce.
Hi, Peg. Hello, Steve Thompson. Hey, buddy. It's been a long time since we've spoke. How are you?
It has been a while. Susie doesn't take much time off.
Well, thanks for pinch hitting today. We appreciate it. Hey, Steve, I think you and listeners are going to really be interested in the topic today, and it's a topic that probably affects everybody. You know, sometimes we do topics that maybe the listeners go, well, that's not me. But this topic today, Peg, I think is going to impact everybody. We've referenced it on the show several times in doing other topics or in answering listeners' questions. And we've been promising that we would devote an entire show. But we're going to talk today about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. And under current tax law, unless Congress does something, unless they update or make changes, that law is scheduled to sunset or end at the end of the 2025 tax year, meaning unless something changes, and it could, but based on what we know right now, things will go back in 2026 to the way they were before the law was enacted in 2017. And what we're going to talk about today, Peg, is what specifically would change and how is it going to impact our listeners? And then we'll even talk about maybe some planning strategies that people can do to be proactive in anticipation of this happening. I want to repeat again, we don't know that it's going to happen, but for it not to happen, Congress would have to do something. And I'm just speaking for myself here. I'm not incredibly optimistic about our Congress's ability to get anything done with regard to, you know, changing the tax law. So, Peg, let's dive into this thing and let's inform everybody of what some of the impacts are going to be.
Yeah, I think, Bruce, you know, we do have it's an election year, and we should just mention that it was signed into law by Donald Trump. And so some impact could happen here with the election, but that doesn't matter to Wealth Enhancement Group. We already have our ducks in a row getting ready to suggest this to clients now. And we'll talk about why are we so ahead, because we have 2023 tax year. And we have that already is passed. I haven't filed my 2023 yet, Bruce. So I'm sitting here going, oh, I got to get that done because I filed an extension. But there's no changes we can make about 2023. But we have 2024 and 2025 to do some things with our taxes. And so, yes, Bruce, they don't rush to get these things done. It takes a lot of conversations. And why did they actually even change it for all these reasons anyway? It went to effect 2018. So many of you now actually do what's called a standard deduction. The percentage is something like 80% of all filers do a standard deduction. And it became that high because what happened in 2018 is they gave us a much higher standard deduction. So we always have a choice. We can take the standard deduction or we can do what's called itemization. And if you itemize, they give us a list of things that we can add or deduct to our taxes, like medical costs, property taxes, charity. Well, those things are the things that they only allow us really to deduct now to qualify for itemizing. So let me give you an example. If you have medical costs, you are subject to the first 10% you don't get to write off. So a lot of times if you're a high income taxpayer, you're not going to be able to write off medical. So hopefully you don't have a lot of medical bills. I see very few people able to write off their medical costs unless it's something extreme. Then the second one is your property taxes, and you could add in your sales taxes. But guess what? They capped that at $10,000 for all of us. Then you can do mortgages, and you can only do a certain amount of your mortgage. And then lastly, charity. I'm very happy that they kept charity as a deduction. But once again, 80%+ of people do standard, because what they ended up doing is it used to be for a married filing couple, a joint filer, that we got a standard deduction of about $12,700. Well, then with this change, we get $29,200. So voila, very few people have enough itemized deductions to not, you know, they might as well go standard. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, I think you said this, but just to make sure listeners have clarity, you know, the standard deduction is more than double what it used to be. And if it goes back to $12,700, then many of you that are currently taking the standard deduction, because it's $29,200, if it goes back to $12,700, you might itemize again, because maybe now your itemized deductions exceed that standard deduction. So one of the great benefits of increasing the standard deduction was for so many people, it just simplified their tax preparation. They didn't have to try to add up and keep track of all those itemized deductions. They just know going in that their standard deduction is going to be higher, and it made life a lot easier in terms of filing that tax return. So again, if nothing changes and we go back to the standard deduction of $12,700, obviously that impacts, again, probably almost everyone listening right now, and we need to be aware of it. Peg?
Yeah, there's also this thing called AMT, which is alternative minimum tax. And that was established oh so long ago. I mean, I started in the business in the 80s, right? And this already was known to be alternative minimum tax. And bottom line, it was just a different method to file your tax return to see if you were getting too many preferential deductions. And if you were a high income taxpayer, they would say, oh, you're a high income taxpayer, we're going to add back some of the deductions that you took. Bottom line, there isn't a lot of people that are affected by that. But in this case, they had changed it, and the phase-out limits were changed at the time. I don't run into that many people, Bruce, that are subject to alternative minimum tax. But the things that we're working on now, and we're very aggressive with our clients just to say, hey, you might want to start looking at tax strategies now, because we have a couple years before this change might happen. And the number one thing is to bring income forward. Pay on some income that you would otherwise maybe not if this event may or may not happen. And let me give you an example of that. So if you have an IRA, because it's all taxable, and you're so happy that you let that compound, you know, over your whole career and your savings, but you know, you have a huge IRS bill that you have to pay one day. So why not take some of that money out of the IRA and deem it taxable? Because you might be in a lower tax bracket now before the sunset of this Tax Cuts and Job Act. So we're working with clients suggesting that. Bruce, what's funny about that is people look at you like, what? You want me to pay more tax now when I could defer it even longer? But it takes a little bit convincing. But once we walk through the pros and cons of that, people are open to that. Now, one of the things you do by taking that IRA money out, you could take those net dollars after you pay your tax and put them in a savings account or an after-tax account. But one of the things we suggest to people is Roth conversion. So if you're going to pull that money out of your IRA and maybe you want to then you pay your tax, then you want to put it in a Roth IRA called a Roth conversion so that that future money grows tax-free. So then people's ears kind of perk up and say, oh, that might make sense. So the theme here is, you know, don't defer income forever. Try to look at opportunities to maybe pay more tax or get money out of a tax deferred account in the next couple tax years. Bruce?
Peg, I love that you went into kind of a strategy that we might suggest in terms of if your tax situation is going to be worse in 2026, if this law sunsets. You talked about pushing income forward if you can. One good example of that is Roth conversion. But for anyone listening that still isn't convinced that they need to do any proactive planning, you might be listening and say, you know, all you've talked about so far, Peg and Bruce, is that the standard deduction might go down. I don't care. But another thing that's going to change, Peg, if this sunsets, is the tax percentage income, the tax brackets. So currently, as an example, there's a 10% bracket, there's a 12% bracket, there's a 22. Well, if it reverts back to what it was in 2026, there is no 12% bracket. So many people right now that might be paying 12% federal percentage tax rate on their income, maybe in 2026 on that same income, you're paying 15% or 3% higher, or instead of 22, you'll be paying 25, or instead of 24, you might be paying 28. So this is not insignificant, and this is impactful to almost everybody. So it's not just standard deduction, it's tax rates. And to those that, you know, the other thing, Peg, in, I want to keep emphasizing, this is not a for sure thing. This is what will happen if Congress does not take action. But we've always kind of coached clients even before this act that when you look at the history of U.S. tax rates and where we are now, and you can also couple that with the information that our federal debt and deficit is staggeringly high, you just have to look at it logically and say, well, do you think our taxes are going to go down in the future? Now, for a lot of people, they might stay the same, but I don't think for hardly anybody our tax rates going to go down. For many people, they will go up. Some people might have them stay the same. But our tax rates right now, compared to where they have been historically, are at historic lows. So, again, I think you can make a compelling case in terms of long-range tax planning that tax rates for most people are never going to be lower than they are today. They might stay the same, but they're certainly not going to go down. And then also, Peg, I like what you said about, you know, again, people sometimes are reluctant to the idea of, what? You want me to pay more taxes this year than I would have to? And, you know, when we talk about pushing income forward or Roth conversions. But again, comprehensive financial planning that we do at Wealth Enhancement Group, we're not just doing tax planning for 2024. We're doing tax planning for our clients' lifetime. And sometimes you're better off paying a little bit more in the short term because it saves you a lot in the long term. We're trying to reduce our clients' net taxes over a lifetime. We're not just focused on one tax year. So I'm really like where you went in terms of starting to offer some suggestions or strategies and not just us telling everybody what the problem is. Peg?
Yeah, I think it's more so even if you're working, like we're, people in their late 50s, early 60s, or anyone that's headed towards what's called a required minimum distribution at 73 years old. So sometimes it's hard because even for myself, I think, I got to get some of that IRA money out of that taxable bucket. We worked, 25 years and saved for 25 years and compounded and let it go. The amount that you have in there could be staggeringly high, meaning you kind of have a huge IOU to the IRS. So we're trying to coach people, even younger, trying to get that money out of there and get into a better tax situation before your required minimum distribution age. Because what we're seeing is that when people have to take that required minimum distribution, they're saying, I don't need that money. I don't need it now. And so then we end up having to pay the tax. We end up reinvesting it. But if you could do those Roth conversions ahead of time, that would be a good step. And the reason I say that, and I just want to make a real clear, is that required minimum distribution mandated amount cannot be put into a Roth conversion. You have to take that out and pay the tax, and it can't be moved into a Roth. Now, what you can do is you can do money after you solve for your required minimum distribution. You still do Roth conversions, but you can't do it with that money that the IRS is mandating once you're 73. Bruce?
Peg, Peg, to that point, again, it's such an excellent point. When I think prevailing wisdom in traditional planning always coached people to not take money out of an IRA until the government forced it out, that you should continue deferring or delaying those taxes as long as possible. And since the inception of Wealth Enhancement Group, we stood up, we raised our hand, and we said, wait a minute, we don't think for most people that's actually true. If you're retired and you're in a low tax bracket and we can take an IRA withdrawal and soak up that low bracket, you're probably never going to be in a lower bracket than that. And if you wait and keep deferring everything until you have to take the required minimum distribution, that distribution alone might push your income up and you get what we call bracket creep, and it's forced out at a higher tax rate. Now, again, the time to start doing that planning is not when you're turning 73 and you have to take required minimum distribution. The time to start doing that planning is now, if you're in your 50s even. And this gets back to what we talk about consistently on the program that we call tax diversification. So many people have the overwhelming majority of their savings or investments in these tax-deferred plans. And we're not against the tax-deferred plan, but we would like some diversity. We would also like some money in taxable accounts and also hopefully some money in tax-advantaged accounts like Roth, where maybe you avoid the taxes altogether. Peg, we've just got a couple minutes before we need a break. What else do we want to make sure that we hit for listeners in terms of important things they need to know about this law sunsetting at the end of 2025?
Yeah, so I will probably talk a little bit more on the backside here, but there's a big change to the federal estate tax exemption. And that just means how much can you die with without giving the IRS Uncle Sam more money? And so back in 2017, it was $5.5 million as an individual. In 2024, it's $13.1 million. And in 2026, it's dropping to $7 million. So there's a lot of planning that you can do. A lot of people listening are saying, okay, that doesn't apply to me, right? But as of October 18th of 2023, there's 2.1 households that have $10 million or more. Percentage-wise, that's 1.62%. So this applies to the people that have that greater wealth. And a lot of these, the wealth has been compounding and rolling, to the next generation. And so it's time to do some planning if you are a high net worth client. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, a lot of people don't think of themselves as wealthy, but you know, where I grew up in out in Olivia, Minnesota, if you have a lot of farmland, it could apply to you. If you have a small business, you're a small business owner, and you look at the value of your business. So you're right in terms of percentage of people this impacts. It's comparatively low, but those people that it does impact, it's some people that wouldn't think of themselves as that wealthy. Number one, and number two, it's a lot of money for that percentage of people. So again, there's planning opportunities, you know, before we get there. So Steve, I know we've only got about a minute left before we need to take a break. When we come back after the break, Peg, I know there's a couple things you want to dive a little deeper into with regard to estate planning. And by the way, another name for estate planning is legacy planning. To anyone that says, I'm not rich, I don't have a big estate, estate planning or legacy planning just means assuming you don't spend your last dollar the day you take your last breath, whatever's left, where do you want it to go and how do you get it there efficiently and effectively? That impacts all of us. We all need to do that. So when we come back, we'll dig in a little bit more to legacy planning and we'll certainly get listeners involved in the second half of the show as well. Steve?
It is Your Money with Bruce and Peg, and you can call this number 24/7. 1-888-6-ADVICE. That's 1-888-6-ADVICE. You can email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, or you can call or text the studio line, 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. If you have a financial question for Bruce and Peg, you can call this number 24/7, 1-888-6-ADVICE. That's 1-888-6-ADVICE. You can email your question to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, or you can call or text our studio line right now at 651-461-9226. Text or call 651-461-9226. Now, here are Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor Peg Webb and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Good morning.
Thank you, Steve Thompson. Thank you for sticking with us, listeners. If you joined us late, Peg and I have been talking about the fact that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 is, unless Congress does something to extend it or change the tax law, this law is set to sunset or change at the end of 2025, meaning in 2026 our tax situation will go back to what it was prior to the changes that were made by the 2017 Act. Some of the things we talked about were the standard deduction will go down, the tax brackets will go up by percentage, the amount of income that you can earn and still be in a bracket is probably going to go down a little bit. And then in terms of planning opportunities, we talked about pushing income forward to the extent that you're able to. Now, again, this is not possible for everybody, but one of the ways that you can push income forward might be a Roth conversion, where you take a distribution from a traditional IRA, you pay the taxes now, presumably at a lower tax rate than what you would in 2026 and beyond. And if you don't need the money for lifestyle or you don't need that income, you can reinvest it into a Roth where no future taxes are going to be due. So that was some of the things that we talked about, Peg. Before we go, and I know Steve tells me we've got texts coming in already. Before we go to listeners' questions, and they will drive most of the second half of the show, were there any other key points, either things that you think people need to know and or strategies that we proactively want to talk about before we go to just Q&A? Peg?
Yeah, we didn't take a whole lot of time about the big change to the federal estate tax exemption. And once again, we always called that death taxes, because what it means is if you die, the IRS is going to look at your net worth and see if some of that net worth is owed to the government. And it's based on whatever the current law is as to the amount that you can die with. So when we ended at the break there, I said in 2017, it was $5.5 million for an individual. 2024, it's $13.6 million. In 2026, if the Congress takes action and changes it, or doesn't change it, it's going to be $7 million. Well, what that means is that's the dollar amount that you can keep. Everything over that is then taxed at a particular percentage. So it is not small. It's not small at all. So a lot of questions we've had, Bruce, over the last couple weeks about gifting. And so we talk about these annual and lifetime gifts. Well, the annual gifts, I see a lot of clients across the board ask me, how much can I give to my family and friends without having to tell the IRS that I'm giving my money away? Well, in 2024, you can give up to $18,000 per person. So you can give $18,000 to one grandson, two grandsons, you know, on and on and on. And you don't have to let the IRS know that you've been gifting that money. It's a good idea to maybe jot it all down. And when you did the gift and the fact that you're proving that it's under $18,000 or under, so that you don't get audited, because there is such a thing as a death tax audit. So what people do is they like to give money day to day and watch their grandchildren and their children enjoy it. But one of the things that we ask our clients right away is, what do you intend this gift to do for your kids or your family? You just need to ask yourself, is this something that you want to do? Can you afford to gift? That's the big question that we get from clients. Can they afford to gift? Knowing that we're all living longer and that healthcare costs are very expensive, you know, we run some financial strategy situations for people just to say, hey, this is what we see happening in the future. It's just a forecast, but that might give you a better insight as to, do you really want to give now? The number one thing that I see in my practice is blended families. So second marriages, and, you know, how do you deal with the kids in those two different marriages? Well, a lot of times we'll recommend trusts and different type of trusts. Like there's a spousal lifetime access trust that you can set up to try to skirt maybe some of these high taxes that you're going to pay. There's a qualified personal residence trust. I'm not going to get into all the detail about these, but there's also this charitable remainder trust. So we have a lot of people ask us, how can they give away money today and either create an income for themselves, and then when they pass away, the monies will go to the charity at that time, or they want to start doing outright gifts today. And so those are just some of the strategies. And then the last one, which we used a lot, is called an irrevocable life insurance trust, because when people start to become required minimum distribution age at 73, so many people say, I don't need that money, right? I hate that I am forced to take that money out of the IRA. Well, we offer sometimes this irrevocable life insurance trust, because then you can buy an insurance policy, take your required minimum distribution, the net money after taxes, pay that premium, and start to build a legacy for your family that way. So it's just another option. So, Bruce, I threw a lot of things out there, but depending on your circumstances, and that's what we as financial advisors do, is we get our arms around your entire situation and then might suggest one or two or maybe none of the above based on what is important to you. Bruce?
Yeah, and last word, and then we'll go to listener questions. You know, there's a lot of things, Peg, that we didn't even get to today. In fact, there's just not enough time in an hour show to talk about all the potential changes and all the potential strategies. So we tried to hit on the things that I think are most relevant, most important, most impactful to the most people. And I think we kind of did a good job on that. But the other thing I would add is, again, the complexity here. So We just talked about things at the federal level. Well, all these tax situations that we just talked about, whether it's a state tax or income tax, might be, you might also have your state that you live in that you add to that. You know, it's not just if I'm in a 15% federal tax bracket, but I live in the state of Minnesota, that might be another 5 or 6% that goes to the state of Minnesota. And the exemption at the federal level is lower in the state of Minnesota where we live in. Now, you might live in a state that doesn't have an estate tax or doesn't have a state income tax. But again, it gets more complex when you factor in the state that you live in into the big picture. And the other thing is, Peg, that we didn't mention, and I'll just do so really quickly, and you can add on if you want, there's also these ripple effects. So when we talk about pushing income forward or accelerating income now because we think tax rates might be higher in 2026 and beyond, we also have to look at the ripple effects. For example, if we accelerate income, are we going to push income up to a point where it's too high and it increases someone's Medicare Part B premium 2 years down the road? And most people, you know, again, if they try to do this on their own, don't have the foresight and don't think about things like that. So I guess my bottom line here is this is not something people should try to do alone. You need an accountant and or a financial advisor. And for the legal documents you referenced, Peg, you need an attorney. These strategies, these things we're talking about, you need to get some help. And, you know, our role as financial advisor is sort of the quarterback. You know, we might tell you, you know, you also need an attorney to draft legal documents, or you need an accountant for the tax prep. But at the end of the day, we're sort of the coordinator and the planner, and we'll have conversations with these other specialists that you work with on an as-needed basis. So we work as a team to make sure that the client is getting the best possible advice, taking the best actions. Peg, I'll give you the last word before we go to questions. Anything you want to add?
No, I actually know that there's a lot of people waiting for us to answer their questions. So let's go ahead and do that.
All right, let's go to the text line. By the way, you can text the program or call 651-461-9226. And Peg and Bruce, if you don't need money from an RND to live on, can you donate to charity and not pay taxes? First of all, what's an RMD?
Yeah, Peg, re-explain. We talked about it a little bit, but give people clarity, required minimum distribution. And it's such a really good question because it is a planning opportunity. And talk a little bit about QCD. That's where they're going. Peg?
Yeah, so RMD is required minimum distribution by the IRS given a certain age. You have IRAs that you've been deferring for a long time, and they're going to request a percentage of that IRA that you take out. Now, I kept referring to in the front half of the show, 73 years old. Well, there's a lot of you out there that started the required minimum distributions at 70 and a half. And then they changed it to a little bit older. So I know there's a lot of folks out there that are taking their required minimum distribution. So one of the things that you can do, and I actually thrilled when this option became available, is you can have your required minimum distribution, all of it or a percentage of it, and have it go directly to a charity. And so that's just a process that you would do with your financial advisor, or if you do it yourself. It's not too difficult to do, but the money cannot come to you first and then you give the money to the charity. It's mandated that you directly give it to the charity. Now, in some cases, the custodian will make out the check to the charity and allow you to go hand it to the charity. But still, it has to be, the check has to, or the deposit has to go directly to the charity. Bruce?
Yeah, and the only thing I would add is, in terms of being philanthropic or achieving your charitable giving, let's be honest, most of our clients that do charitable giving are not just looking for a tax break. Now, if you can get a tax advantage for your generosity, it would be silly not to take it if you can, but that's not their primary motivation. So the qualified charitable deduction is probably the most efficient way to give the most to the charity with the least amount of tax We talked earlier about the increase in standard deduction. Most people's charitable giving right now, they still don't give away enough that they itemize their deductions, so they really don't get a tax benefit. With the QCD, it's a very effective way to give to charity. And the only other thing I would add is if you're focusing on the tax reduction, remember, if you're giving money to a charity, and God bless you for doing that, that means that's money you don't get to use for lifestyle because you're giving that away. So you're saving money in taxes, perhaps, but you don't have that money to use. So the QCD, or Qualified Charitable Distribution, Qualified Charitable Deduction, it's a strategy to maximize your generosity. It's not only a strategy to reduce taxes, because if you need that money yourself for your quality of life, your lifestyle at retirement, it's not going to make sense for you to give it all away. And again, we applaud gifting, whether you're gifting to a charity or you're giving to a loved one. But our job as your financial advisor is to make sure you're not too generous and you don't overgive and you have enough money for the lifestyle you want. We don't want you living on, you know, ramen noodles and never taking a vacation. We want you to enjoy your retirement. Steve?
All right. Another text on your money with Bruce and Peg. Is it possible to do a Roth conversion using funds in a traditional TSP account? And I should pause again and say, what is a TSP account?
Thanks, Steve. Peg, TSP, is that a thrift savings plan?
Yes, it is. It's interesting because I don't have a lot of those. My group that, my team, we don't run into them as much as we used to. You, Bruce?
No. We have an industry that's got so many acronyms and so many initials. Steve, you know, what's an RMD? What's a QCD? What? I know.
Yeah.
What's a TSP?
Federal employees.
All right.
I don't know the answer to the question. I would think they would be able to do a lot of the things that we are able to do with a corporate plan.
Here is another text. Still working at 72 and collecting Social Security benefits. I did a Roth conversion, but my Social Security benefit was impacted by that.
Oh, wow. Okay, so yeah. Peg, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's a gotcha. That's something that actually is a shocking moment to most people, because your Social Security taxation is based on how much income you have. And I always refer to the front page of your return, because the front page, it's determined how much of your Social Security is going to get taxed. And so, yes, you have to be careful about creating more income. As we were talking about in the beginning of the show, I always highly recommend that people do an estimated tax return. So we're in 2024 right now, and you can enter a bunch of different scenarios in that tax software and find out, you know, is that something I really want to do? Now, I've had many clients over the years have their Social Security affected by, giving to charity and having different income come on their front page, but yet they still want to do it. And it's more prevalent now because of this threat of maybe the income brackets going back up and the standard deductions going down. Bruce?
Yeah, the only thing I would add is even simplifying it a little bit more, Peg, I can envision a lot of listeners right now that are in their 30s, 40s, 50s that are going, what? I have to pay taxes on my Social Security benefit when I receive it? A lot of people don't know that until they get there. And I've gotten the question countless times over the year, well, that doesn't seem fair. It's like I'm being taxed twice because my Social Security was FICA was withheld from my paycheck, so I paid in. Now I have to pay taxes when I take it back out. It doesn't seem fair. Well, that's the law. And again, there may also be state taxes on your Social Security benefit as well, depending upon the state that you live in. So again, this is a planning opportunity to try to mitigate that to the extent that we can. There may not be anything we can do about it, but again, when we talk about gotchas and ripple effects, Social Security tax is one, Medicare Part B premiums is another. It's not as simple as just looking at what are my ordinary income taxes in the current tax year. We have to look at the long-range impact of this planning, which, again, not to be a broken record, not to be redundant, but most people can't figure all this stuff out on their own. They need some help. Steve?
Another one from the text line here on Your Money with Peg and Bruce. Is there a tax benefit if I pay down a child's student loan debt early or help them with that to mitigate some sort of tax liability later?
Peg?
Well, I think in this case we're talking about a state tax, like Ed asked. I don't know of any way that you can get a write-off per se for helping your child pay off student loans. But what you can do is you can gift the money, you know, so it's $18,000 per person. So if you're a couple, you could do $18,000, you know, for yourself and $18,000 for your married. And then you would get that off your estate, so that you wouldn't be taxed. But otherwise, Bruce, I don't know of any other deduction that you get immediately on your income tax.
No, I agree. And again, this gifting, we'll close it this, Steve. I don't know if we have time to squeeze in another, so I'll elaborate a little bit on this. Peg, when we talk about the gifting of $18,000 per year per person, that's the amount of gifting you can do. They basically pull that away from your estate exemption early. You can gift more than $18,000. If you give a child a new car, you know, that costs $50,000, you can do that. But then there's going to be some additional forms and filing that you need to do. The $18,000 per year per person is what you can gift without any tax considerations, without any extra effort. And that's a lot of money. If your child is married and you're married, if you give your child $18,000 and your spouse gives your child $18,000 and you each give $18,000 to their spouse, that's actually $72,000 in a tax year that you can give away without any tax consideration. Now, again, I realize most of our listeners don't have the economic wherewithal to do that, but that's how much you could do without any fuss, any muss. Peg, we got about a minute. Last word of the day for what people need to know before 2026.
Yeah, the only other thing is with the directly to charity, when you are in the required minimum distribution age, they kept that at 70 and a half. So even though the RMD is 73, you can still give money at 70 and a half, and they capped it at $100,000, Bruce.
Thank you, Peg. Thank you, Steve Thompson. Good to be with you again, my friend. You did a great job. Thank you.
Bruce Helmer, Peg Webb, Your Money. And, of course, if you have a financial question for Bruce and Peg, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE. That's 24-7, 1-888-6-ADVICE, or email yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com.